Welcome to the Compliance Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Turtletaub from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics and Healthcare Compliance Association. Joining us today from Munich is Daria Galenti. Daria is Senior Business Integrity Manager and Regional Investigations Lead for Nokia, and she'll be speaking at the 2021 European Compliance and Ethics Institute on anti-retaliation programs, and that's what we're going to be talking about today. First of all, Daria, just want to say thank you for joining us today and then for joining us at the conference.
Thank you for having me here, Adam.
Oh, it's our pleasure. So when it comes to preventing retaliation, I think it's one of those things that's always going to be difficult, no matter how good compliance programs are. There's a natural human tendency to want to find out who it said something about us, especially if it's critical. And people sort of have this natural reaction wanting to retaliate. Is it the uphill climb that I think it is?
Yeah, well, Adam, it's definitely quite a steep and long climb where, unfortunately, even the most experienced and well-equipped professionals are not able to reach the summit. And I think one of the reasons for that is that we look at this problem in a very traditional way, sort of from a company-centric perspective. You know, when you Google the word combination managing retaliation, the first 5 to 10 pages come up with the results that are related to how do we support retaliation claim process, overview of the anti-retaliation laws, and there is nothing on how do we actually help and protect our employees from retaliation or how do we actually prevent it from happening. So all of the information we see is basically around post-accident damage control. So the second reason is companies are operating under the assumption that retaliation isn't an issue if there's only a few cases reported through the hotlines. And it's sort of this optimism bias, right? It won't happen to me. It only can happen to my neighbors, you know? And it did happen to Wells Fargo, Jackson National Life Insurance, Sacramento Hospital. And this is a very dangerous mentality. Same time, number of the retaliation claims are rising, right? So this year it was around 50% of the charges received by EEOC. So, let's not forget that retaliation reporting is so-called secondary follow-up issue that is related to the initial complaint that definitely has to be looked at. And you know, the last but not least, retaliation is a very sort of uncomfortable and suffocating topic, right? So dealing with it is like biting a lemon. I always compare it with biting a lemon. So it's kind of good for you, but it doesn't taste good. So when companies start to sort of deep dive into this topic, compliance departments have to go to the leadership team to get their buy-in. They take the risk of not taking action. And unfortunately, the results of it outweighs the risk of not knowing. So this is a steep climb we're talking about.
I love that analogy about biting a lemon. I mean, it's one of those things where, yes, people, they like it, but there's that bitter reaction, they go back. It's something that we really do have to keep going back to over and over again. How can we help people to understand that this whole impulse to retaliate is not the right one? I mean, that's a huge change in people's thinking we have to try and make.
Well, I think first of all, we have to stop basically ignoring this problem. There's this nice Japanese pictogram, don't listen, don't see, don't speak. So this is probably the first step for the companies. If we want to sort of correct the impulse and persuade our leadership to act, I think it's very easy. We just have to look at the legal costs, filing and processing report costs, settlement and awards for the recent years, and tremendous damage to the company's reputation when those cases pop up, even if there's one or two cases. If we're talking about how to sort of prevent people from those impulses, I think we need to look at what's happening basically in the retaliator's mind, understanding why one is ready to cross that line, which is not an easy thing to do, right? So first of all, it can be a prejudice-based thing, common prejudices resulting sort of in the retaliatory behaviors. It could be fear of not being good enough. So allegation made might be weakening the person's position. The interesting one is the understanding of the social boundaries that can be violated by the persona of the reporter. So we often observe a situation when the local office culture sort of developed in hierarchy, set of rules and undesirable maybe traditions that are being followed by employees. And when those are being violated, the person is ready to step out of that circle. Evaluation of something as unfair to oneself is also a natural reaction to the displaced feeling of fairness from the reported subject that obviously results into personal vendetta. So when we look at this, we analyze the reasons why people are actually doing it. That's when we can help and find remedies to this problem, you know. But I think the main point here is talking about this problem, recognizing it, showing real cases, sanitized scenarios, communicating the existing policies and mechanisms instead of just keeping it under one's hat.
So we've talked to this point about this issue sort of big picture across the organization, you know, sort of philosophically, but let's focus in on sort of the one person. You know, it's the person who is the subject of an investigation of feeling as if their entire career is on the line. How can we help them resist the temptation to retaliate or enlist others in doing it?
Mm-hmm. Sure. So, well, that's interesting that we're sort of looking at the person of the retaliator, right? And not of the person who is being retaliated against. But I think for both of these people, we have one and the same solution. So we have to turn the compliance program from a compliance push into compliance pull program, right? So we have to work on both sides of the program, which is preventing and addressing retaliation and receiving and responding accordingly. So when we speak about the prevention, there are three main components, right? Training, communication and delivery, and the analytics part. So on the training side, what I would suggest is to create an anti-retaliation training module, which can be served as a plugin module for the existing communications and, for example, market leader compliance trainings. On the communication side, what we did is we created a so-called anti-retaliation hub for employees, where all of the information, support tools, real life cases were gathered in one place, and employees didn't have to sort of go through that SharePoint jungle, right? Searching for separate materials. On the analytics part, so that's sort of a newer trend. The anti-retaliation trackers and high-risk employee trackers is something company could implement in order to identify people susceptible to retaliation or people that are likely to retaliate. When we are speaking about the response system or retaliation response part, we have to go beyond the existing procedures that are usually to be found in the company, right? So what we had, we've created a hotline reporting process because we realized that some people believe our hotline is being outsourced, right? So they don't trust the system. And we did engage HR in giving their guidance on the problem. Different help tools could be something companies already have in place, such as personal support services or legal mentoring. What we did is we created an ethics care mentoring system, which consists of employees that are willing to sort of sacrifice their personal time and help the people that are being retaliated against, but also retaliators to sort of recognize their problems, support them mentally, and advise them on the existing mechanisms, tools that they can that can help them. And finally, the audit part. So, right, we have to make sure the program is improving, that we close the gaps. So the satisfaction service is something that is advisable to do in each cycle, so to say.
I want to go back to something you mentioned a little bit ago, which was data analytics. How can data analytics be used to fight retaliation?
Mm-hmm. Sure. So this is sort of a, you know, I think if we would talk about it 5 years ago, that would have an aha effect, right? Data analytics was just sort of introduced to the compliance area while other departments are using it for a long time, such as finance, HR, and so on. But I think especially in the anti-retaliation program space, that is still relatively new. So in terms of data analytics, the first type of analytics we can do is the anti-retaliation tracker. So defining the high-risk company segments and individuals that require more attention and call for additional measures. What is being pulled together there is A, the generic environmental data, such as country employee population, number of cases reported in the country, for example, results of some kind of surveys or age distribution of the sites, and so on and so forth. So then we would add the attribute-based factors, so individual data, such as flight risk score of the particular employee, job grade, family situation, any information you know the company can get. Plus, we would add the team demographics information, so nationality and gender diversity in teams or the legacy organization. And by weighting all of these criteria, ranking and giving it a certain risk rank, we could actually get a very solid retaliation forecasting model. So that's number one. And number two is the high-risk employee tracker. So that aims to monitor the employees that are potentially at risk of being retaliated against after an initial complaint is raised. So we could also track manager's action that possibly retaliate against the employee. So what would we track is the data that is hard to access on a regular basis. So if the employee was put on a PIP, or if his or her job assignments changed, if his or her pay was decreased, if the person was demoted, right? So all of these things that are typical for so-called soft retaliation, which is the retaliation type that is most common one, right? So nobody just gonna go and punch somebody in the face. So those are this hidden signs that the person is facing retaliation.
You know, there's is really an unfortunate combination of both overt and hidden signs to look out for. Now, the purpose of all these efforts is, of course, to make it easier for people to come forward when they see wrongdoing. What else could we be doing to encourage and protect whistleblowers?
Sure. I feel like the word whistleblowers, I don't really like this word. I would prefer to call them compliance heroes. So I think what we need to do is just to raise awareness and have more individual approach towards this. So we have to have one-on-one conversations. We have to establish a good follow-up system in the investigations function. As for example, automated check-ins on the reporter when the investigation is closed. We have to have a remediation measure trackers in the investigations function. And just generally stop ignoring the problem and working on the existing tools, even if there is no opportunity to, you know, invent those trackers or implement those trackers, just to make sure employees are being taken care of, looking at it from a more human perspective rather than company-centric perspective.
Well, and definitely this is an issue of human behavior and how to manage it. So it's important to take that very human-based approach. Well, Daria, thank you so much for sharing these insights with us today. I look forward to hearing more at your session at the European Compliance and Ethics Institute. I also want to thank all of you for taking the time to listen. I'm Adam Turtletop from SCCE and HCCA. I hope we're able to expand your compliance perspective.